Let's face it, parenting is the most important job on earth. Every day presents a stack of different challenges, and more often than not, the answer is outside of the box. On this podcast, we will offer proven strategies, interview pioneers in education, give insights into how to be successful parents, and even share our imperfect experiences of being parents ourselves. We're all in on this journey, and we will span the globe to find out what is working and who has the answers. This is the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast. Here are your hosts, Darren McCarthy and Brian Powers.
Hey, Darren. So today we're talking with Dr. Larry Waldman from Phoenix, Arizona.
TopPhoenixPsychologist.com.
And he's a not only psychologist, but author and speaker. We wanted to talk to him about parent training and reinforcement. And he did a really, really good job. I mean, he talked about his book, went back to his book, Who's Raising Whom, when it comes to parenting and your children.
Yeah, what I liked about, sometimes you see that doctor, the PhD, and you get a little nervous because you might think they're going to talk over your head.
Yeah.
But I think in the first 13 seconds, we had a rapport with him, and it was just so easy to get along with. He was so matter of fact. And so everything was really easy to understand. You know, I've had conversations about behavior before where they get a little bit heady. You know, yeah. Dr. Erica was very, very good in that sense as well. And she was very on that topic of antecedent behavior consequence.
Yep.
So that article is still floating on the website, which is a good article. Dr. Larry Waldman takes it a big step further because he's got 45 years experience, and he's written these books, and he's also a parent himself.
Yeah.
And he's also his grandkids, and it sounds like his kids are actually, his son is a school psychologist, and yep. So, I mean, I thought it was a great, learned a ton from everything he had to say. And he answered some of our practical stuff too, which is always good.
Yeah. Right? I mean, he gave us some real life examples, almost down to what he did with his kids, teaching them how to act in the grocery store.
Yeah. I almost had a real time example.
Yeah. You know, and I could say to him, how was he looking through my window from Arizona? Because some of the stuff he was talking about felt like it was exactly what we're dealing with here in our house. So,
well, I mean, the one thing that stands out for sure for me is that because we're trying to save time as parents, we're always moving on to the next thing on the next list. We don't take the time that a child needs to give them the direction that they need to help us save time. It's just this crazy cycle. Take a moment, explain what the parameters are. And then he goes into a great one about the grocery store. He goes into another one about when you're working at home, and then make the whole thing contingent for, I need you for an hour to let me do this video uninterrupted. And then after the hour's done, we'll go take the dog for a walk or go to the park or whatever it might be. So I love those kind of real life samples, because if it's happening to you and I, chances are it's happening to a lot of parents that.
Yeah. So now he brings a lot of value in this episode. And before we get into it, I just want to remind people about our Facebook group, Sound Foundations for Parenting Facebook group. We'll put a link, you know, here in the show notes, but you should definitely get in there, join that. We're doing that 30-day challenge with our Big Rocks Little Kids calendar planner resource. You know, as we kind of come out of the school year, kind of what was the school year for the last couple months, and head into the summer, it's really something that can help folks kind of set that structure for their kids and for their own sanity as you come into the summer months.
Yeah.
It's a freebie, right?
I mean, we're adding to those resources. So, So it seems to me like we're working with a lot of, I don't know, kind-hearted folks that just want to share. And so every time we do a podcast, there's one more resource that everybody can, you know, explore and start to implement in their summer program. So it's not like you just go to the website, see what it is, and that's it. It's no longer legitimacy, as they say in marketing. It's more about there's resources constantly changing, right, and being updated. And this, you know, Who's Raising Whom is another resource.
Yeah. No, and the beauty of the group, too, is that, you know, you have questions or you just want to show people how you're using it, those resources, you can. So there's a platform where you can ask questions and have a dialogue. So make sure you join the group. And without further ado, let's see what Dr. Larry has to say. Welcome, Dr. Larry Waldman. thank you for being here with us today, and maybe just give us a little bit of background on yourself and what you do.
Well, I'm an experienced clinical forensic psychologist. I had a very active, diverse practice for 45 years in Phoenix, Arizona. I worked with all kinds of clients, particularly children and families and so on. I also worked in the legal or forensic area involving divorce and so on. I actually stopped seeing patients actively about a year and a half or so ago, but I still teach, consult, write, and speak across the country on topics like this. And I also speak to mental health providers on teaching parents to parent effectively, and also teach providers how to develop an effective private mental health practice.
Great. Yeah, I mean, and I know when we first met and started talking about what we wanted to talk about on the show, you know, you went back to one of your books, Who's Raising Whom, and you brought up the topic of almost parent training through, you know, reinforcement. Maybe we could talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Actually, Who's Raising Whom was my first book.
Oh, wow.
I've done seven now. But without a doubt, actually, Who's Raising Whom is still the bestseller. And I have re-edited it. That's the one you saw as the second edition. And basically, what Who's Raising Whom is about is I take the behavioral school of psychology and try to make it very comprehensible and translatable to parents. Mm-hmm. I try not to get, you know, too technical and make it such that parents have a strategy. You know, most parents, unfortunately, spend no time doing any research or education on this most important job that they're probably going to have in their life. Mm-hmm. You know, which is to raise a responsible, resilient, nice human being. Most parents are basically, you know, just doing it as it goes. And unfortunately, that's not always good. Because, in fact, if you do that, the science is pretty clear, you're going to parent pretty much the way you were parented.
Mm-hmm.
With all the good and the bad. Frankly, that's also true about marriage as well. If you don't study that topic, your marriage is going to look a lot like your parents' marriage. Again, for good or bad, depending on where you're coming from. So what I try to do in Who's Raising Whom is to help parents develop a strategy, at least to have some idea, a general theory of why they're doing what they're doing. And clearly, one of the most important topics is this notion of reinforcement. It's by far one of the most valuable tools that a parent can learn. I've said many times, if you have to learn one thing, learn how to properly reinforce your child, because it's so effective.
Got my notebook, got my pen, I'm ready. Let's go.
Well, what reinforcement is basically something the parent does that increases the likelihood of a particular appropriate behavior. But again, unfortunately, you know, parents have it backwards. As I like to say, parents often operate in what I call the sleeping dog philosophy. And that is, when the dog is sleeping, you leave it alone. And when the child is behaving acceptably, you leave them alone. Well, I get that, and it's not that you can be on your child all the time, of course, but we have to stand back and ask this very important question: what is the child learning? And that's the key, to the strategy. And reinforcement, again, is a very important tool with that key. And so we have to ask ourselves, what is valuable to the child? And basically, from birth to about 12 to 13 or so, one of the most valuable things we can give our child is our time and attention. Let's face it, right from the get-go, the child depends on parental time and attention for their well-being. You know, if a parent doesn't attend to the child, frankly, they could expire. Mm-hmm. So the question then becomes, when do we give our child our time? So back to my example, if the child is behaving well and we as parents ignore them, what is the child learning? Well, you know, I can be by myself and be quiet and compliant and so on, but nothing happens, at least as far as my mom or dad is concerned. But if I stop being compliant and start messing with something or start teasing my sibling or whatever, what happens? Mm-hmm. Mom and dad intervene, or mom comes in. What's that ruckus? What are you doing? And so forth. And so day in and day out, what unfortunately happens in most homes is that the message gets sent unknowingly that, frankly, it pays off to be bad rather than to be good. Mm-hmm. And then many times parents ask this existential question, well, why don't you behave? Well, someday, some prodigal genius at two or three is simply going to say, well, mom, you give me more attention following inappropriate behavior than you do appropriate behavior.
Right. It's the truth.
If you watch most parents in action, that's exactly what's happening. Is that, you know, we expect our kid to be good, and you know, of course, to some degree, that's appropriate. But we take this valuable thing we have, which is our time and attention, and we waste it. Mm-hmm. We spend more time immediately following, you know, with our children, more time immediately following inappropriate behavior than appropriate behavior. So the idea of reinforcement then is to make parents aware that if you want your child to behave better, you need to reinforce more appropriate behavior. You know, when I had my practice, you know, and I saw lots of frustrated parents, you know, when they would come to me, of course, their primary concern was to stop all this inappropriate behavior. And of course, you know, after the first session, when I took the interview, you know, I had the interview and so forth, and then I'm starting with our second session, when I started some of this parent training, I would begin to mention, you know, that we need to start looking at reinforcing good behavior. And they'd say, Dr. Waldman, maybe you don't understand. I'm more concerned about what they're, you know, what they're doing badly rather than what's good. And I said, no, unfortunately, you don't understand. Because if we address bad behavior first, all we're doing basically is providing more attention to the bad behavior, which got us in the situation in the first place. Okay. So what we then have to do is to teach the child that it pays off to be good by catching them when they're good. And then by doing that, actually, you indirectly address inappropriate behavior. Because if the child is getting attention for behaving badly, but now they're getting attention for behaving well, you can see you're now shifting the paradigm. So now the child is like, oh, so when I do this, I get attention. When I do this, I get attention, or I get praised, or I get a reward, or mommy sits down and says, let's play checkers, or whatever. Well, now the child starts learning, yeah, oh, I see. It pays off to be good rather than to be bad.
That's what I wanted to ask you is, when you talk about reinforcement, are we talking about from a perspective of language reinforcement, the attaboys, attagirls, or are we talking about an incentive? Like, how do you put a positive spin on that behavior that you want?
Excellent question. And it takes various forms depending on the situation.
Okay.
Some situations might just call for some verbal praise and so on. Maybe a hug, maybe just a little tussle on the hair, uh-huh. Or whatever. Without a doubt, of course, your ace in the hole is your time. Contingent time following appropriate behavior. So let's just say you ask Johnny to go make his bed, and who knows, the moon is right with the stars that morning, And Johnny ups and does it. Now, many parents go, oh, my God, what's wrong? Is he sick? I mean, I don't get this. What happened? And so forth. You know, so then the kid comes back, and maybe they'll make a comment like, oh, Johnny, thank you for making your bed. Okay, that's fine. But if this is an outlier, you know, if this was some unusual, appropriate behavior that you want to continue, mm-hmm. we need to stop what we're doing and say, Johnny, I really love the fact that you went and cleaned your room upon my first request. Let's sit down and play a game of checkers or whatever, or maybe we'll play a board game or something like that. So now you've invested your time, you see, following this appropriate behavior. Now, before we get too far afield with this, there's two important rules with reinforcement that make it work or not.
Okay.
One, and you kind of alluded to it. Excuse me, here's the gloss. one is the reinforcement needs to be specific. Okay? The child needs to know why it is they got reinforced. I hear parents all the time saying things like, you know, way to go, Johnny. Good job. Proud of you, etc. Okay? You know something? That's not reinforcement. That's a compliment. Okay? Uh-huh. If we go back to the definition, which I outlined a few minutes ago, remember, reinforcement was the application of something rewarding following a specific appropriate behavior that increases the likelihood of that behavior. If the child doesn't know what it is that they did that was good, how are they supposed to repeat it?
True.
So it's up to us, okay, to, as an example, I think I gave you just a few minutes ago, the one where the child magically went and cleaned his room and then came back. And remember I said, you know, Johnny, I'm so pleased that upon my first request, you went and cleaned your room, okay, you know, and you did it according to so-and-so and such, let's play checkers. Now he knows exactly what he did to get this reinforcement.
Let's go real life for a second, right? So sure. The reason I had to split out is because I'm here with my two kids. And my son was banging on the window because he's afraid the fox is going to come to get the chickens, which is not necessarily a bad thing. he's a little obsessed with the fox right now, but you know, but time will go by and I will have spent 2 or 3 hours in here working, and they're 9 and 11, and they're pretty independent, and they're, you know, I would say they're good kids, but they're my kids, right? When I'm done, I want to be, inevitably they'll be good. And I'll go, my job, I should go in there and I should do what as a response to that behavior?
Well, all right. First off, see, if we know we're heading toward a situation that's potentially problematic, again, one of the advantages that we parents have over our kids is we can kind of foresee a little bit into the future where most kids, of course, can't. So if you know you're about to head into a situation where you need to be alone for an hour or two, and you want your kids to basically leave you alone and, you know, not set the house on fire or start a big, and so on, you can set what is called a contingency. Okay, guys, if you know you do A, B, and C while I'm, you know, working and so forth and so on, when I'm done, we will go to the park for 45 minutes, or we'll play a board game, or we'll do whatever. Okay, so now the kids know what it is they're supposed to do and what the incentive is and so forth if they do it. Again, how do most parents handle it? Okay, they go, maybe they're on the phone, maybe they got to make a phone call, mm-hmm. you know, and so on. They know it's going to take 15 minutes to half an hour, and there's a little 3 or 4 year old or whatever, and they say nothing, and now they're on the phone, hi, hello, and now in the kid comes up, yeah, and see, to a child who's 3 or 4, seeing mom go, that's kind of entertaining, you see. You know, think of the control this kid's going, this is pretty neat, I'm kind of bored, I walk in there, and I get mom, yes, And you can see what's going on. See, now we're reinforcing the inappropriate behavior again. You know, if we can think ahead of time, you know, and so on, and set a contingency, which I used to do all the time with my kids. Now, of course, they're probably older than you are. But, and I would set a contingency, say, all right, you know, I need to do this and so on. And that when we're done, if you behave X, Y, and Z, not just be good, okay, because what is that? I need you to do this, this, or this, and so on. You know, then, you know, if you do that, we'll go to the park. And you know, sometimes we did, sometimes we didn't, or sometimes we go to the park, but one child earned it, the other one didn't, but I'm not going to let the one who didn't earn it spoil it for the one who did. So that one sat on the bench while I yucked it up with the other one. You know, so that actually develops resilience as well. Not so that, you know, yes, it was a little difficult, but the child lived through it, and that's okay. Kids learn that, all right, you know, I can live through, you know, a tough time. So rule number one with reinforcement is be specific. You know, let the child know exactly what it is they're doing or did that gets the reinforcement. Not good job, way to go, I'm proud of you, etc. No, you can say it first, then say I'm proud of you, but first let them know. The other important issue with reinforcement is the timing. Okay. Now, you know, given the example I just gave you, if you said to your kids, okay, guys, I'm going to go to work here for an hour, hour and a half, and I need you to play quietly and so forth and not bang on the door and not interrupt me unless the house is on fire, you know, and so on. When we're done, on Saturday, we'll go to the park.
Mm. Lost it.
We lost it. Mm. In my books, I give the example of an overweight person who sits down for dinner and has a piece of chicken breast with some broccoli, followed with a glass of unsweetened iced tea. Very reasonable, nutritious, low-calorie dinner. And then he or she finishes their meal, goes into the bathroom, steps on the scale, and the scale drops 3 pounds. How difficult would it be for that person to eat that way the next evening?
Not difficult at all.
Why?
Because they got reinforcement right away.
Exactly. Immediate reinforcement is powerful. Unfortunately, as we all know, you know, you have to eat that way a long darn time before the scale drops 3 pounds. So therefore, if delayed reinforcement sabotages most adults, what's going to happen to kids? And I hear that all the time with parents. You know, they make a promise they're going to do it later or whatever. No, not with kids, the younger particularly. No, they need it now. Mm-hmm. So if you make the contingency that I'm going to work for an hour or so and I need you to play quietly, et cetera, and they do so, when you come out, you need to fulfill your contract and do it right now.
What's the result of the absence of a contingency?
I'm not sure.
So in other words, if you don't have a contingency, what it sounds to me like accountability becomes an issue for the parent.
Well, so, yeah. If you don't set a contract, then of course the kids don't know. They don't know. Mm-hmm. They don't know what they're supposed to do for how long and what's it going to be worth to them and so forth. So you're basically leaving it up to them. And then again, you're reacting, you know, as opposed to being proactive as a parent. Mm-hmm. This is what you want. I mean, like I said, you knew that this situation, was going to occur. I mean, we do this all the time. An example I use in my book, I taught my kids, both sons, one's now, let's see, Josh just turned 45, he's an attorney. And Chad just turned 40 and he's a school psychologist. So when they're both about 3 or so, I taught them how to behave in a grocery store. So we walked to the grocery store. I got down on one knee. I got eyeball to eyeball. And I said, Josh, it's important that you learn to behave in a grocery store. Now, Behaving in a grocery store looks like the following, and repeat after me. You will walk by my side. I'll walk by your side. You will hold my hand. I'll hold your hand. You will not touch anything. I will not touch anything. You will not ask for anything. I'll not ask for anything. Let's repeat them again. Repeat it again. Okay, now, Josh, if you exhibit those behaviors, when we get back to the bakery aisle, we will purchase a cookie of your choice. If you continue to exhibit those behaviors, upon checking out, you and I will share it. How many sessions do you think it took to teach my kids how to behave in a grocery store?
Not many.
No, exactly. Why? Okay. Uh-huh. Why? Because one, they knew explicitly what their behavior was supposed to look like. And frankly, most parents don't do that. We're pretty explicit when we're angry. I told you not to do. We're careful. We're very clear about what we don't want them to do, but we're not at all very clear about what we want them to do. So I was very clear about what I wanted him to do, and I was also very clear about what the reward was. Now, in a workshop, I had one parent raise their hand and said, tell me, Dr. Wellman, what would have happened if Josh hadn't behaved? And I said, that's a great question. Now, while we're in the store and so on, I'm verbally reinforcing Josh, or Chad, as the case might have been. I like the way you're walking by my side and talking in a quiet voice. What kind of cookie do you think we're going to get? And so on and so on. So I'm verbally doing that. And then we'd get the cookie and so on. Now, in my head, I'll give them two shots. Okay. If I have to talk to them two times, cookie's done. Okay. So, and so forth. If he like goes and touches something, I'd say, Josh, remember the rules? Okay. I'm not going to talk to you again about that. My kids know when daddy says, I'm not going to talk to you about that again. They know thereby, even at three, it's like a shot of electricity goes through, because they know when dad says that, you've got one shot left, because after that, it's over. If I have to talk to him a second time, that's fine. I'll say, oh, Josh, we talked about that, and so on and so forth. All right, we'll check out. And I'll say, Josh, I had to talk to you two times after we set what we did. Now, here's the cookie. I would break it in half, put half of it in the garbage, and eat the other half as we go to the car. Yeah. And my kids know it. And again, some parents say, well, that's cruel. No, that's life. And see, what I was interested, starting from day one, is I wanted to raise responsible, resilient, good kids. Mm-hmm.
That last part, I think, is the hardest, is that if they don't, you know, my wife is always saying, don't empty threat. And she's 100% right. But it's that, you know, follow through of like you said, break the cookie, throw the other half in the garbage. And yeah.
Well, but see, actually, by what your wife is saying is what is happening is the kids have learned now that when you say or threaten something, see, I've never, ever threatened my kids. I warned them, okay, as I say in my book, as I say in Who's Raising Whom, when you're out driving down the street and all of a sudden the railroad trestle, the sign comes down, is that a threat or a warning? Is that saying, well, you might want to think about stopping. Perhaps a train is coming. I don't know, but you can take a gamble. Or there's a frickin' train coming. You had darn well better stop. Yeah, that's the point here. Parents are doing all kinds of threats and threatening and never following up. And the kids go, I don't have to listen to that. They don't mean it.
Well, it's fascinating that something keeps spinning in my head. It's like this, the idea of time management, right? So the reason I think parents don't do these things, one, they might not know. Two is they might know, but they might be so caught up in the task of what do I have to get at the grocery store? And, you know, all these different things that are listed are going on, a constant dinging on the phone and everything, that you forget that 30 seconds that you just took to lay out the parameters of the shopping trip just saved you 25 minutes of heartache going up and down every aisle. Am I translating properly?
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. A lot of parents will say, you know, that's a lot of work. It is a lot of work. But what they forget is that if we took a video, right, if we put video cameras in their house, in every room, for simply a week, and we had someone go all through that and tabulate how much time are you spending dealing with inappropriate behavior, it would blow them away. Because it's hours upon hours upon hours.
Right. But it also seems like this vicious cycle where it's kind of like you're spending all this time and effort doing thing, I say, not being smarter, but working harder. Exactly. And then you get tired and then you don't have the energy to negotiate. So it becomes this kind of this vicious cycle. You're tired, you can't negotiate, the kid wins, and then the thing always spins again.
Now, careful about kid wins. It's not like the kid is necessarily planning, lying awake at night going, okay, what can I do to
drive my parents? Yeah.
No.
We think that.
but it's not true. They're living what they're what they've learned.
Right.
Okay? As far as they're concerned, you know, it's like a little elf popped up and says, look, okay, just between you and me. Okay. If you really want to get your mom's attention, what you need to do is, you know, something like that, you know, and that does it. You know, sitting there playing quietly, reading a book, you know, forget it.
That doesn't do the job, yeah.
It doesn't do that job. Uh-huh. So it's important then that we really understand that. It saves so much time. You know, I started out as a school psychologist, and part of my job many times was to help teachers manage their classrooms better. Mm-hmm. And you know, I used to sit in the back of the class sometimes and listen to this. Some of these teachers are screaming all day long. They go home with laryngitis. They can't talk for screaming and so on. But I would help them develop a behavior system using points or using just reinforcers and so forth. And, you know, they used to go, oh my God, I mean, this is so much easier. It's so much happier and so on. But again, the kids don't know. You know, they don't know how they're supposed to be raised. You know, they're just doing what comes natural. Mm-hmm. You know, they want attention, period. And they're going to get it any way they can. Let's face it. It starts from, amazingly, day one. You know, my younger son, the school psychologist, has a set of twins. They're, in the Northwest. And we visited, it's been a while now. So the kids at that point were maybe 14 months old, okay? All right? And I watched this whole thing just develop, okay? The little girl, okay, would go and take a toy from her brother, who's bigger than her a little bit. And then, of course, he would resist, naturally. Sometimes she would, but sometimes she'd actually purposely fall down and then scream like the little guy took her tonsils out. And then my son or my daughter-in-law would come in the room, see her on the floor screaming, him with a toy in his hand, and think, oh my God, this big brute of a boy is abusing his sister. And right away, what do you think they do? Reach down and pick her up and comfort her. And she shut up just like that, And I'm watching this, and I'm not, of course, I don't say a word, even though I'm an expert, do you think my kids ever ask me for information? I'm just dumb old man, and that's okay. I get it. I like to say whenever I visit my kids, I always come home with a sore mouth. That's from biting my tongue so much.
Well, when you're visiting them, they don't want you to have a busman's holiday.
So the kids left they went shopping, leaving my son and my daughter-in-law left, leaving the two little ones with us, you know, my wife and I. And the little girl, you know, and I explained this to my wife, what I'm seeing. And the little girl, of course, pulls the same stunt. And she's screaming on the floor, and you could see her. She's looking like, hey, I'm crying here. You know,
what's going on?
And I'm just ignoring it. Well, after a couple of minutes, you know, she actually came up to me, you know, like, didn't you see me cry? You know, and so and so on. And I just ignore that. And then, you know, now I'm waiting for her to engage in something appropriate so I can attend to her again. And as soon as she started doing something, then I went to her, so forth. But we didn't see that behavior again for over an hour until my son and daughter-in-law came back. So this is the opposite piece to reinforcement, okay? Which is this planned ignoring, which I call extinction, which I gave you an example of. You know, so on one hand, you know, the competent parent is catching their kid being good, reinforcing them immediately and specifically with praise, the contingent praise, mm-hmm. and their time, and at the same time, often not paying attention, okay, to, you know, most attempts on the part of the child to gain their negative attention. A lot of families, a lot of parents and kids are caught in what I call the negative attention trap, where the kids have pretty much learned that, as I've already been saying here for some time, that the best way to get attention is to misbehave. And the parent has already concluded that the child is basically going to misbehave, and now they're frustrated, so they're even less likely to engage the child when they're good. So they're just only looking for good behavior. And so you can see now what's happening is most of the interactions are negative. Mm-hmm. You really want to get away from it. I have prescribed this intervention in my career, okay, I don't want to exaggerate, so I'm going to say 50 times, okay? Because a lot of parents complain about their kids fighting with each other, just kind of. And remember, my grandkids were doing that now, not even at a year and a half. This was already starting. And what I tell parents is, as soon as you see the kids start to squabble and so forth, simply, without a word, pick up, go into your room, sit on the edge of the bed, leave your door open, just look at your watch and see how long it takes before one or both of them enters your room. Because I know what's going to happen. Within 30 seconds or less, they're going to bring the fight to you. He did it, she did it. And that should tell you something. And that is what the kids have learned now is that when they start to squabble and fight, it's up to mom or dad to break them up. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the sibling rivalry, as we like to call it, you know, is basically a great attention getter. Mm. Many parents say, oh my God, if I did that, there'll be blood on the floor. I said, you know, give it a shot, let's see. And they're always amazed that there they are, fighting, you know.
When they come to you like that, because that is kind of what happened this morning in my house, you know, the example I was going to give kind of an offshoot of that is where a lot of us are working from home. Right now, my wife and I are both working from home. The kids are obviously home. You know, so there are times where they need to be on their own and we're doing our stuff. And that happened this morning. And the boys were wrestling and we were repeating ourselves of stop, don't do that, you're going to get hurt. But then, you know,
And how effective was that, by the way?
It was nothing. No. Okay. Didn't affect. So how would you – so you essentially ignore it and then go to, you know, another spot. When they come to you, what do you do there?
Well, again, you know, once they've come to you, I would handle it very perfunctorily. You know, this is your issue. You guys need to work it out. Mm. Isn't that what we want them to do anyhow? I mean, it's not our job. I mean, I've probably said this at least 25 times in my career. I've suggested to a lot of parents, they go to that store where the salespeople sell shoes and they've got a whistle and a referee shirt, and to go and buy one of those outfits, you know, with a whistle and a referee shirt, because that's what they're doing all day long, is refereeing between their kids. No. You know, once their kids realize, you know, that you're not going to intervene, it's up to them to fix it or deal with it, it will. Now, here again, this is the time for a lot of contingencies, you know, throughout the day and so on. You know, hey, you know, break it up. When we do this, we'll do this, you know, and so on. You know, my wife taught fourth grade for 30 years. Her class ran like a clock. Well, she, of course, had an unpaid consultant, you understand. But one of the things she did is she made sure that every work period, let's say a 45-minute work period, was followed by a 10-minute fun activity. Then there was another 45-minute work period followed by another 10-minute and so forth. And of course, what the kids quickly learned with Mrs. Waldman is that if you want access to that 10-minute fun period, you better mind your business during that 45-minute work period. So basically, there were contingencies throughout the day, you see. Mm-hmm. So simply by you know, organizing her class and her day that way, it went very, very well.
Wow. So, I mean, at this point, like, I'm going to send you a ticket to come visit us.
Yeah. We're only an hour apart, so you can spend time.
I'm going to erase the semi from semi-retired. So, I mean, at this point, are you more focused on kind of getting the word out about your books and so on and so forth? Are you taking a few clients on, or what's it like?
No, I don't. I stopped seeing patients actually in December of 15, now that I think about it. So it's been a while. Sold the building. And so, yeah, I've retired from active practice. Huh. I still consult to Social Security. I teach. I'm an adjunct professor. I teach counseling classes to beginning therapists and so forth. I write lots of articles. In fact, I invite your listeners to go to my website, which is topphoenixpsychologist.com. All my books are listed there. May I run through them?
Yeah, please.
All right. Well, the first one we've already talked about is Who's Raising Whom. I'll do them in chronological order. The second one is Coping with Your Adolescent. So as I like to say, if you haven't read Who's Raising Whom, you're certainly going to need the second one, which is Coping with Your Adolescent. Mm-hmm. The third one is the marriage book entitled How Come I Love Him But Can't Live With Him, and so on. Too bad my wife has already passed. She could love him. It's better that she's gone. Right?
That's weird. She's holding a sign behind you that says exactly that.
Right. It's 48 years, actually.
And, wow. Congratulations. And
at least as of a half an hour ago or so, she's still up here. The fourth book is the book entitled The Graduate Course You Never Had. That's the book I wrote for mental health practitioners on how to develop, manage, and market a private mental health practice, since I got pretty good at that. The fifth book is a book entitled Too Busy Earning a Living to Make Your Fortune, Discover the Psychology of Achieving Your Life Goals. And in that book, I take the four different schools of psychology and apply it to the top reasons why we often fail to reach our life objectives. The sixth book is entitled Overcoming Your Negotiophobia, Negotiating Your Way Through Life. And the book that just came out now a month and a half ago is entitled Love Your Child More Than You Hate Your Ex, What Every Divorced Parent Needs to Know. And that's based on the last about 15 years of my practice, where I spent a lot of time in the courts as an expert witness, working with couples who are divorcing and things like that.
Great stuff. Yeah, that's our guys from Dadcast would like to probably talk about that conversation. Yeah, it's a hot topic right now. Yeah, we really appreciate having you on. And, I got my notes here. We got a lot of work to do with a lot of reading that's available. And I've been, kind of talking about one basic book for years upon years. So I'm glad to kind of open the library up for parents and myself included, and Brian as well. So we thank you for your time. We really appreciate it.
Dr. Larry, we'll definitely include, you know, links to your website and those books in the show notes, and you know, definitely push people. You have a lot of great article topics up there as well. So again, like Darren said, we really appreciate the time, and we look, I don't think this will be the last time. We'll definitely get you on again.
That'd be fine. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast with your hosts, Darren and Brian. Find them on social media at Sound Foundations for Parenting. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review and subscribe. And we'll catch you next time on the Sound Foundations for Parenting podcast.